Welcome to The Roundup, where we tackle big health topics from the outback to the tropics. I'm your host, Alyssa Hatherley, a local GP and head of James Cook University's Clinical School in Mackay. In each episode, you'll hear from experienced clinicians sharing expert insights on key regional health issues, best practice approaches, and practical strategies to improve patient care in regional and rural settings. Before we begin, I'd like to respectfully acknowledge the Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, their contributions to healthcare, and the traditional owners of the lands in which we practice and provide education. In this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Angela Anson, a perinatal psychiatrist from the Cairns region. Welcome, Angela.
Thanks, Alyssa, for having me.
It's really great to talk to you about perinatal and infant mental health today. You work with Cairns Perinatal and Infant Mental Health Service. Can you just tell us a bit about what perinatal mental health is and why it's so important?
Yeah, I think back to general principles of the definition of mental health and adding what I call a perinatal lens to it. So if you think about mental health as being the emotional ability to deal with stress and achieve one's life goals. And in the perinatal period, which by definition is pregnancy and depending where you are and where you work, up to 12 or 24 months postnatally, it's an incredible time of change for parents where they navigate immense life change, identity change, changing goals. And so inherently, I don't think it's rocket science to anticipate there'll be some emotional challenges during that period. And so there are some unique things to think about in terms of mental health during that really pivotal time in a family's life.
And whilst it's easy to anticipate that there's going to be so much difficulty, in my experience, people seem to think that they're just going to sail through it. Women have been having babies for centuries. It shouldn't be such a big deal. I'm just going to assimilate this new baby into my life and carry on as before. But it's really not like that at all, is it?
I guess I always think of it, I mean, probably why I do it, is such a rewarding time because it's both. There are parts of it that are instinctual, have been done throughout history, and then other parts which you don't know what you don't know and are outside of one's control that will be challenges and hurdles. And I guess I always think that's just what it takes to raise a life and how incredible it is that we are such dependent creatures in that pregnancy period and those first couple of years that Winnicott often talks about. He's a famous psychoanalyst and was a pediatrician, and he is famous for the quote, "There's no such thing as a baby." And this kind of cryptic quote speaks to the fact that babies all need caregivers because we're born dependent on another to live and survive.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah, there's not many species that provide so much care to their young. Why has perinatal mental health become such a widespread concern these days?
Sorry, just going to joke, just because this is FNQ specific, but I am fairly new and I discovered the other day, having found a tiny bush turkey chick in my pool area, that they're born precocious, which means that as soon as they hatch, they survive. They don't need their parents. So you're right. It's a very unique thing to the human species that we are so dependent at birth. Sorry, you will have to remind me what the question was.
I was just thinking, you're lucky you've got a bush turkey in your pool area. I have an enormous lace monitor, but she's also beautiful. The question was just about why perinatal mental health has become such a widespread concern these days. I don't even think 18 and a half years ago when I was having my first baby that perinatal mental health was on the radar now like it is today.
It's a really positive thing that I guess it's happened alongside a greater conversation regarding the importance of just mental health in general. And I guess it sort of merges with the fact that we now understand so much more about the developmental determinants of health and not to be a splitter, but both physical and mental health as experienced by human beings as one whole entity. So What we now understand through robust evidence is that should mother experience life adversity and mental health difficulties during the pregnancy period, that's not just associated with impacts on her own mental health, but actually obstetric outcomes are affected. So there are increased risks of miscarriage, stillbirth, intrauterine growth retardation, premature labor, when there is untreated mental health conditions. And this is just looking at group populations, not to instill guilt, but just having a look at probably the sort of the stress axis and its effects on pregnancy and development. And then later on, we're looking at bonding attachment difficulties for bub, particularly in the postnatal period when mother's mental health is detrimentally affected, and going forward to increased risk of later developmental adversities and behavioural difficulties in their own mental health. It's all a bit chicken and egg. There's bits of it that are going to be genetic predispositions, and other parts that will be nurture, and other parts will be the confounders of things such as negative lifestyle behaviours associated with having poor mental health, such as, say, unhealthy lifestyles and things like that. But even when all those things are controlled for in studies, there is a specific correlation to adverse maternal mental health. And that's why there is this specific focus on perinatal mental health and really identifying early in pregnancy who is at risk or showing early signs of difficulty that we can really try to either prevent or intervene early and try to support the next generation going forward. And there have been actually cost effectiveness studies showing that this is so important on a societal level.
And it's just an important reminder, isn't it, for our patients when we do see them in that antenatal care phase or even in those first few months and beyond after their birth, to remind them how important their own mental health is. It's often secondary to their concern for the pregnancy, but having to highlight how important their own health is to make sure that that growing fetus, that newborn baby, that toddler is maximally healthy as we can possibly make them, really comes from the health of the mum, the other parents, further more distant family members who are part of that village and other siblings. It's also important in improving the health of that baby.
I think it's such a rewarding time of life to work with mothers and parents because there's so much hope, and part of that's actually biologically, what's the word, it's kindled in us because there's a wonderful word called matrescence, which speaks to the changes, and they're both brain changes that you can see on neuroimaging, let alone obviously the psychological, emotional changes of getting ready for the next generation, creating life, one's hopes. And so, actually, I find parents really open and motivated to want to change. And when they understand, they might be less invested in their own recovery, but when it's framed as your recovery is so important for your baby, because without you, they can't literally survive. So I think people are really motivated to improve, to get help, to be a better version of themselves from a physical and a mental health point of view. So I think really reframing it, I really do believe human beings intrinsically want to help the other, and that's so evident when it comes to their own babies.
So, Angela, what are some of the symptoms that we might be looking out for in the mums, either during their pregnancy or that early postnatal period?
Well, I guess it's one of those things where most people know how they feel, and that's a really important part of the history taking is how were you before the pregnancy? But what we do know is because there's increased rates of depression, anxiety, asking people about their moods, if they're feeling more tearful, more days than not, more often, what kind of things that are playing on their mind. Do they feel anxious? Is it hard to switch off from worries and concerns? To, as a psychiatrist, I see more less common things where people sort of can ultimately lose touch with reality. Having said that, though, just an are you okay type conversation is so important. Most people, once given an opportunity to talk about difficult emotions, are relieved to talk about these things. And what we do have at the moment is universal screening for mental health difficulties. It comes in the form of the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Scale, which we actually use in pregnancy, not just in the postnatal period, plus other psychosocial screening tools to talk about stresses and adversity. And that opens up the conversation to talking about how does one cope with stress and asking if people are okay with how they're going. I really do feel that perinatal mental health is everyone's responsibility, not just a mental health clinician's. It's actually these gentle, non-judgmental conversations about difficult emotions that start something potentially healing for that parent in front of you.
Yeah, it's those family members, isn't it, who might pick up on a concern before the mum even recognizes it, or when the mum is at a point in her life when she can't even recognize her own mental health changes, or the GP, or, an employer if they've gone back to work. All of that collateral history must be invaluable for you, Angela.
It is so key, and I always go back to it was actually part of a social media campaign for a non-government organisation that promotes perinatal mental health called the Gidget Foundation last year. And they talk about it takes a village to raise a child, and that's an old African proverb. And I really do believe that. And I mean, I'm so lucky to work up here in Cairns. I myself am Asian Australian. I work with a really culturally diverse population up here, particularly with I think it's over 17% Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander representation in up here. And so I think a lot about the village and how much support people need, and the people that know the parent in front of you, and particularly if they're worried as well, and what might work for this parent to feel like a stronger version of themselves.
Yeah, it's fantastic that you have that service in Cairns and can deliver such an amazing intervention for those women who need it in your region. Now, when doctors recognise a concern and are keen to intervene, what are some of the first steps that we can take? Might be we've got that patient in front of us who we have a concern about. There might be a concern on that Edinburgh Depression Scale that you mentioned. What are our first steps to help improve the health of that mum and that family?
I think often people themselves know, but you need time to gather that information or even to build that foundation of trust to talk about, because this is really difficult. For a lot of people, they want to put on a brave face to say that they can provide what's best for their child. But so to say, actually, I'm struggling and maybe what I'm doing is not enough, it's really hard. So be prepared to take a bit of extra time, and that's okay. That might actually, in some way, save you time. And make sure that you do it in a place where you don't feel pressured and rushed, and neither does that person in front of you. So it is important to identify, not obviously the most pressing things will be the stresses. Diagnosis is always key as well, because there will be different treatment options depending what symptoms you elicit from the patient as reported, in addition to what you see yourself objectively, and that's called the mental state examination. And to understand the urgency of treatment needed and whether or not this person needs more supervision in terms of their treatment, it is also important to ask about risk. And in this case, it's suicide and risk to their child. And when I say risk to their child, these are difficult conversations, often couched with, often these thoughts are that. Intrusive thoughts of I might hurt my child, and that's a distressing thought. But sometimes it can be things like unintentional, so neglect. I'm scared I might hurt my child because I'm just so full of worries, or I'm so depressed it's hard to just do things day by day. So you can see already why it does take that extra time to gather that information, because one really needs to get a sense of what diagnosis am I working with or worried about, and therefore what treatments there are. I think one of the big things to remember is most parents want treatment, and giving them that hope that with good treatment, their mental health can be optimized and really positive outcomes can come of this, including feeling more resilient, more robust, having greater self-knowledge. So in and of itself, describing mental health symptoms is not a weakness, and reframing it as how courageous that person in front of you is for opening up, wanting help, and then having an exploration of what that treatment might look like. And as a matter of rule, I've never seen exception, the treatment is a package. It's never just one thing. And we talked about that village. Do you mobilize supports? How can you get rest? How can you optimize your physical health? You need to build up that Maslow's hierarchy of need. Is your housing stable? And then you start to work towards the mental health treatments, which are a bit more specific.
I love that. Mobilize your supports. We should all be mobilizing our supports, not even in the perinatal period, right? So once we've improved access to supports for those patients who we're a little bit concerned about and trying to provide that more holistic care as best we can, what other treatments are we going to be offering them?
So I stratify the symptoms in front of me. So I'm just going to talk more to the more common perinatal mental health disorders.
Sure.
And so the most common is going to be perinatal anxiety. So that could be more often than not, it will start in the pregnancy period. Pregnancy is inherently stressful just by the nature of it being a bit unpredictable. We can channel that in a healthy way. It's about the bell curve of normal stress and worry to an optimal period, and then it tips over to a less functional amount of stress and worry, and that's where we talk about anxiety disorders. And that can go on to the postpartum, and then what you often see is a bit of a, I like to call it the poop out, because you get so exhausted in the postnatal period in that newborn phase that you do see this pattern of postnatal depression occurring. Having said that, depression can occur in the pregnancy period as well. So look, there's a bit of overlap between the two conditions. They often coexist for many of our perinatal parents. And then it's important to have a think about, is this overall looking at the symptom cluster and its effect on one's what we call function, so ability to work, care for themselves, maintain relationships, care for their baby, or pregnancy in this specific circumstance, mild, moderate, severe. What does that mean? I like to think about it more in terms of mild to moderate is something that could be managed in primary care with some enhanced services such as GP, often it's private psychologists or the community health centres run early intervention parenting programs with various sort of therapeutic modalities, and also some simple antidepressant medications as well that are known to be safe in pregnancy and breastfeeding. That would be completely appropriate management in primary care. When you look at moderate to severe, so it really is a level of psychiatric symptomatology that's really severely affecting someone's life and their ability to achieve those goals, such as caring for your child, caring for yourself. And I always think about that aeroplane analogy of putting one's oxygen mask on before you put your child's ma oxygen mask. So if you're really struggling with how to do those things day by day, looking at really neglecting yourself, most parents actually will always prioritize their children's care. So it's usually the self-neglect you see in the first instance. Then you really need to be quite robust about that package of care. So you'll probably be looking at doing things simultaneously, such as antidepressant medication, plus psychological therapies, plus enhanced support services, whether that's increasing the level of obstetric midwifery care or postnatally with child health services, because, like I said, there's no such thing as a baby, but for a lot of our parents, ensuring the pregnancy or infant's growth and development is going well is also very key to promoting that mental health recovery for the parent.
Okay. And of course, as you mentioned, there are some more severe things like perinatal psychosis that might happen. How common are those sorts of things, Angela? You would see them more than most, but in general terms, are they increasing in frequency or still just every now and then?
It's still a every now and then. There's definitely better surveillance, I would like to call it, and particularly as part of obstetric training is that emphasis that postpartum psychosis is a obstetric emergency because it's a rare outcome, but it is a risk of to mum's life and baby's life of these are hard things to talk about. Very rare. I just want to reassure people it's very rare, but cases around the world of suicide, maternal suicide and infanticide. These are really rare. The condition itself is rare. It's about one in 2,000 or more. So it's something up here I would see once every 3 to 6 months. And so what we try to look for, there are a few what we call risk factors and predictors. So established diagnosis of bipolar affective disorder, family history of postpartum psychosis. So those are the kind of things where we try to flag these things early and give people lots of education around a bit of a safety plan, a birth plan as well. So I don't want to worry too many GPs and medical students other than please don't feel like you have to try to work these things out on your own. This is why my job exists. As a perinatal psychiatrist, I've done subspecialty training. This is my bread and butter. This is very much a referral early on, or even for something I like to call preconception counselling, which is planning pregnancy, particularly having had a history of these things, or even just psychosis before, as well, or being treated on an antipsychotic. It'd be important to link in with the perinatal mental health service at your local hospital. And with the new mental health state budget in Queensland, all the health services are, if not already established, are establishing perinatal mental health services as part of their mental health portfolio.
Oh, that's great news. I would certainly really appreciate that where I am down in Mackay. Now, Angela, you mentioned antidepressant medication where appropriate that's safe in pregnancy. What are the psychotropic medications that the psychiatrists are using at the moment most confidently in patients that we can feel confident initiating in primary care, for example?
I really have relatively no qualms with sertraline. That's got the safest body of evidence in pregnancy breastfeeding. The other one would be escitalopram because it is a little bit easier to titrate. It is ultimately a very individualized, what I call a risk-benefit analysis. One has to be pretty open about trying to gently counsel women without inducing guilt about the obviously, we talked a lot about the negatives of untreated mental health on not just mum's mental health and well-being, but also the obstetric and baby's developmental outcomes as well. But also, I always try to emphasise the positive. With treatment, these things can be reduced as well. And treatment doesn't have to be medication. So that's part of the alternatives in the informed consent shared decision-making sort of matrix that you're trying to set up with people. Often, this is a lot of information, so I do offer more than one session. I think that's good practice. Really encourage involvement of trusted family members as well, but ultimately empower women to feel that they know their situation best as well. Other part is also there are different ways. Like I said, I'm not stressed about those particular SSRIs. There are ways that you can feel a bit better, that women can take something home with them to read. So the Choice in Medication website, which is available for Queensland Health, and I think you can actually just get it online, have excellent, very patient-friendly leaflets, including a lovely set of scales when you look at how to balance treatment versus non-treatment with antidepressant medication and depression, anxiety, and other disorders. So, yeah, just remember you're not alone. Feel confident about the discussions, have it more than once, and have it include support people as well. And don't hesitate to give your local perinatal mental health service a call if you're at a bit of a loss.
Fantastic. And even if we don't have that perinatal mental health service established in our area just yet, our local psychiatrist might be a good first port of call who might then be able to phone a friend in another area. Is that correct?
Yeah, and there is actually a Queensland statewide phone number regarding medications in pregnancy and breastfeeding. So if you're in Cairns, it gets stabled and dispatch it to my team. But elsewhere in Queensland, you can just call that number. So I think it's just a pretty easy Google, and it's from memory, it's possibly through the Royal Children's Hospital, but it's Brisbane based, but it's a statewide service.
All right, we can find that number and add it to our podcast notes today, Angela. Now, Angela, should we talk a little bit about infant and maternal bonding? That's sometimes something that mums and families more generally can get really anxious about, isn't it?
Yes, it's I guess maybe perhaps it's helpful to think about the definition of attachment. We talked about how dependent our little babies are when we're first born, and we're hardwired both physically and behaviorally to want to form emotional connections, evolutionary, to get our needs met. Because if we don't form a loving bond with usually mum, but we do this with everyone around us, dads, grandparents, the village, this little baby will not get fed, will not get settled, will not get soothed. And so this becomes a platform and foundation for a baby getting their needs met. But it can only work if that caregiver, and so in this example, it's largely going to be mum, reciprocates and feels that strong bond and connection in turn. And so in my service, we will get referrals when things don't feel like they're going so well, when mums feel disconnected. Often that will be related to something like anxiety and depression or trauma. It may also be baby related. You know, some of our babies have really hard starts in life. We've got premature babies, babies with medical issues, unplanned pregnancies, so which are 30, about 50% of the time. And so that makes it a really hard start in life to get your needs met when you're really dependent. And so I guess I try not to worry the referrers, when so our referrers will be child health nurses, midwives, junior doctors, GPs, but we've all got an experience of what it's like to be a baby, maybe not a parent, but being a baby. And that sense of, I don't feel like this is right, or this is, I'm a bit worried. That's the kind of thing that's important to have a conversation around. How are you feeling? Do you feel connected with your baby? How easy is it to settle your baby, to read your baby? How easy is it to basically meet your baby's needs? And when that is affected for various reasons, there's help out there to support the family. So yeah, it is a field of work that's becoming more recognized in my field. We call it the infant mental health interventions, and so down the track for very sort of complicated situations, we can do things like what we call dyadic work, which is therapy with mum and baby and video work, etc. But really, I think I just want to bring it back to first principles of, we all know what it's like to be a baby, and when we get that sense that something's getting in the way of that natural ability to bond and love one another for that mother and baby, or carer and baby, then don't worry, escalate it. There's help at hand.
Oh, Dr. Angela Anson, this has been a fantastic talk today. Thank you so much for your time. We've talked about the importance of helping families and babies deal with stress just so that they can achieve those life goals. Going back to first principles, as you said, we've talked about how to manage mild to moderate perinatal anxiety or depression using medications where necessary, but making sure we're employing all of those other services at our fingertips, using the child health nurses, private psychologists, GPs, mobilizing those families, other supports themselves, the grandparents, the friends. We've talked about options for more moderate to severe anxiety or depression or other more serious concerns like psychosis, which might, as you've suggested, just mean we need to increase the frequency of visits with the obstetric team or with the GP or with that psychologist afterwards. We've been reminded of the safety of psychotropic medications, feeling free to commence sertraline or escitalopram, knowing that they're really safe during pregnancy and breastfeeding. We know that there's a statewide perinatal and infant mental health service being established in your area if there's not one already. We know that there's a statewide assistance available for medications during pregnancy and breastfeeding. There are lots of services otherwise, like the Gidget Foundation, as you mentioned. Dr. Angela Anson in Cairns, thank you so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure, Alyssa. Hope that was helpful.
For more information about the Roundup or to share your feedback and ideas for future episodes, visit nqrth.edu.au/roundup-podcast or contact us at nqrth.mackay@jcu.edu.au. We also want to advise that the views and opinions presented in this podcast are those of the speaker only and do not represent the views and opinions of James Cook University, Northern Queensland Regional Training Hubs, or Queensland Health. The content supplied in this podcast is not intended as medical advice and is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Northern Queensland Regional Training Hubs is an initiative of the Australian Government's Integrated Rural Training Pipeline and is facilitated by James Cook University in partnership with public and private hospitals, Queensland Aboriginal and Islander Health Council, health services, Aboriginal community-controlled health organisations, and general practice clinics.